Welcome to another COVID Times edition of The Conversation. Today we're going to step away from our thread on diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice, and we're going to talk about the plan for reopening schools in the fall. Are you a parent of students who are concerned about the virus, and or are you concerned about distance learning? Are you a teacher? Does your school district have its plan formulated? Give us a call, 503-325-0010. Just to let you know, well, I'm Graham, by the way. I'll be your host. And I have no intention of carrying this conversation. I am looking to you. I don't have kids, and I'm not a teacher, but I think that this is a topic that everyone's concerned about right now. And so I would love it if you checked in with us. Give you the number again, 503-325-0010. We're discussing reopening schools in the fall amid a pandemic. Other countries are planning to reopen schools, but they've handled the pandemic better than we have. We can talk about private schools opening and public schools staying closed. We can talk about traditional versus non-traditional. We can talk about homeschooling. Happy to see a couple calls coming in. We have our first caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi. I am just seeing this as an opportunity to learn from our very recent mistake of reopening early. I live in California, and we obviously opened too early. We're seeing a huge surge in new cases, and to look at opening schools in 2 weeks and saying, yeah, now's the time, is just a bad idea in my mind.
So what are the options?
Well, the main options that they're looking at right now are fully distance learning and hybrid learning and in-class learning. And our school had a board meeting yesterday where they talked about all three options. Basically listed them as three or four different phases. And so we're going to start with phase one, which is distance learning for 1 month. And then they're going to reassess after Labor Day. And if there's demand, they may, and if you know, it seems safe, they will reopen for 2 days a week of school and sort of do a staggered approach. And then phase three was to open 4 days a week, and phase four was to open 5 days a week. And then they did mention that distance learning will be available, I believe, for the whole year. Yes, for the whole year, if parents want it.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, they really seem to be bending over backwards to try to accommodate the very wide variety of opinions about the matter across the land.
Good. Well, any other thoughts for us?
No, just that you're doing a great job, and thank you for having the conversation.
Well, thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, next caller, you're on the air. We've now got one open line with one person on hold. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in on school reopening, and I think the staggered approach that the gent that was on before me does make sense. But to a degree, it is a truth that for the economy to get back on its feet, schools need to reopen so parents who are staying home can go back to work. That's an absolute truth, I think. But what's also true is that it's all a moot point in that the teachers aren't going to come. They're not going to show up unless it's safe. So all of the debates and so forth are interesting as far as what they reveal, and there's some science that needs to be formalized about how young kids can become or not become vectors. But at the end of the day, like I said, I think it's moot because the teachers aren't going to show up if it's not safe, and that'll be the deciding factor.
It's a complicated topic.
That's my story.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Bye. Next caller, you're on the air. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Mick Mortlock. I'm retired now, living in Astoria, but I have a master's degree in educational leadership, and what's important is that 40 years ago I started working with online learning and created the first online learning for Intel Corporation.
Wow.
And I have a lot of experience either transitioning courses from what we're being taught in classrooms to online or developing online on their own. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of conflict about whether that can be good or not, and I think you're always going to want to have teachers available. But you can do a pretty good job of teaching people at a distance. And, you know, I'd be glad to help people do that. So, and I'd be glad to answer questions. So.
Well, it sounds like you should maybe give out some contact information if you're willing. Maybe not your phone number, but maybe your email address or something like that?
Sure, Graham.
Unless you just want to give it to me and I can field calls or emails here at the station?
Either way. My email address is M, as in Mary, B, Victor, Mary, O-R-T-L-O-C-K, at gmail.com.
I'm writing that down. M-V-O-R-T-L-E-C-K?
Almost. M-B-M-O-R-T-L-O-C-K at gmail.com.
Got it. All right. Well, thanks for that input, and I hope we can stay in touch.
Okay.
Take care.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Next caller, go ahead.
Hello?
Hi, that's you. Go ahead.
Oh, good. First of all, I just want to thank you for doing the show and everybody, all the staff and volunteers who are doing all this hard work.
You're so welcome.
As far as schools reopening, I think that I am a educator, and I'm a special ed educator, and I think it's a very difficult situation that we're in. Listening to parents, to the politicians and everybody else putting pressure on the educators. But the main thing that is needed, or one of the main things, is more funding. There's
right.
No way you can service all the special ed high-need students virtually because most of them don't have access or they're not capable of learning that way.
Right.
So there needs to be more staff that can be trained or who are already trained to go out and work with the kids. And the other is, it's just, I think we're going to fail. I think you, like what's been happening when you open up a school, people are going to get sick. So that's going to happen. People are going to continue to get sick if we insist upon opening the schools all the time. But there isn't enough money to have enough buses to take all the kids at different times. So I think the main issue is funding, and it's going to need to come from the community as well as federal government. That's all I wanted to say.
The funding needs to come from where?
I think it needs to come from the federal government, from the state, and from the community. There's no way it's going, and maybe the federal government has enough money. I'm not that educated on all the funds and where it's at. But I know there's a lot of private industries that have an awful lot of money and who are not necessarily taxed as fully as they could be. But there needs to be money that isn't being given to education. It's being given to the military. It's being given to other places that some people feel like are more important than education.
Diverting money from excessive military spending to education sounds like a great idea to me.
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it?
But it would be great. We really need to remember that tomorrow it's going to be run by the kids who are missing out on education.
Yikes. Start an educational industrial complex. Thanks for that call. Next caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Who's that?
That's you.
Oh, great.
Good morning.
Great commentary this morning. I'm enjoying everybody's points of view. I'm just thinking that one of the things that we have to do is to straighten out the president who continues to threaten the withdrawal of federal funding to education as a blackmailing kind of thing to make everybody go back to school. Those funds were determined by Congress, not the president.
Can you talk a little bit more directly into your phone, please?
Sure. Those funds were appropriated by Congress, and it's but not the executive branch's privilege to seize those funds and to hold them hostage in some sort of a political snit, which he is always in. So he has no right to tell us when to go back to school because that man didn't do his homework. And if you haven't done what you're supposed to do and then you turn around and tell us when to go back when you didn't even believe in the virus in the first place, you don't have much standing. And it's time that we all rose up and said so and to be refused to be blackmailed by this jerk who simply wants to blame other people for his failings. There's never been a more unsuited man for this job. Thanks for letting me get this off my chest.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for all you do.
Okay, we got through our first group of callers 10 minutes into the show talking about reopening schools in the fall amidst a pandemic where numbers are rising in the U.S. and we're doing just about as bad as any advanced and wealthy country could possibly be doing with this. That last caller was, I think, encouraging you to take action with your vote in November, which I wholeheartedly endorse. And the number here is 503-325-0010. We've got a call coming in, but we've got two open lines. I want to know if anyone is taking the opportunity to think outside the box or to view this as an opportunity rather than just a time to panic and be scattered and who knows what. I don't envy folks in the education field right now. Next caller, you're on the air. Hi, go ahead.
Is that me?
That's you.
Okay, thanks, Graham. This is Jim. I'm wondering if history would be any revealing if back in 1918 with the German measles or the Spanish flu, I mean, what did schools do then? Did they shut down and everybody flip their lids and run around like chickens with their heads cut off? Or what did they do? Is there a place in history for us to learn anything? If so, it would probably be a unique experience because history doesn't seem to mean very much to folks these days. But that's just a thought. Is there? I know the situation 100 years later, we have different technologies, and now mommy doesn't stay home with the kiddies while daddy goes to work. Mommy has to work too. So I don't know if it's relative, but it seemed like there may be something in there that should be learnable from history. And I will hang up and listen to the comments on this.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
You bet. Bye.
503-325-0010. What do you think? Can we learn from history on this? I don't think we've learned from history on this yet, but it might be a good time to start digging. So thanks for that, Jim. 503-325-0010. I'd like to hear from some teachers. I understand that there is a Facebook group for parents that is in the county here, and some are working on forming small homeschooled groups because they don't feel safe returning to schools and don't believe the distance learning options will be robust enough. What do you think about homeschooling? Next call. Oh, hi. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, this is Victoria.
Hey, Graham. Victoria.
I was doing a little something else for about 10 minutes. I might have missed out on someone already telling you this, but the thing about distance learning via computers is that there's very erratic, inconsistent wideband in many rural areas throughout the state of Oregon and I'm sure elsewhere. North Sonoma County has great broadband because Halem Tell, so long ago, 20-some years ago, installed fiber optics and bring it on. However, you go 12 miles south to Rockaway, and there's two providers. They're both for-profit. They're both poor quality service. They don't respond to outages, and you pay more money. That is going to screw up people trying to get their kid educated using the Internet. So it's a side issue, but it's, you know, it's what Al Gore talked about, you know, long ago. So, you know, and distance learning is exhausting for the teachers and it's exhausting for the students via the computer, as you know. Looking at a screen all the time gets you a little crazy.
Oh, it's rough.
Yeah. So that's all I can think of. You could think out of the box. You said outside the box. And I went, oh, yeah, outside the box. When I lived in Ilwaco, across the street was a young family. He taught like fifth and sixth grade at the Ilwaco school, Hilltop School. And he said whenever they took the kids outside to the so-called outdoor classroom, which was over on Black Lake, it's just a bunch of benches overlooking the lake, he said everybody was so well-behaved. Kids that were cut-ups inside a classroom suddenly were marvelous individuals. So maybe it's doing more teaching outdoors.
Literally outside the box.
Yeah. Anyway, and my husband just said something to me, but I couldn't catch it, so... Oh, he says half the kids go one day, half the kids go the next day. But, yeah, he said it was remarkable how behavior improved. Anyway, and I think if we look at some models from some other countries, you know, my Finnish heritage, I always run that up the flag that the kids spend time outdoors every single day, regardless of what the weather is. They just bring appropriate clothing. And there's things we could do that would be helpful, I think, for a kid's mental health. And they still get to see each other, at least, even if they're not hugging and, you know, playing baseball. So, okay.
Yeah, what kind of game of tag can you play with no contact?
Laser tag.
There you go.
yeah. I guess I had my coffee. Okay. Take care, Graham.
Thanks,
You're
Victoria.
Doing great.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.
Okay, we've got another caller, but we've got two open lines, 503-325-0010. Please join the conversation talking about reopening schools. Next caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Is that me?
That's you, sir.
Okay. Well, I'd like to talk from the aspect of the student. The last few weeks, we had a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old staying here with us, and they had been in San Diego when they switched mostly last school year, that had switched mostly to online learning for the remainder of the school year, and they didn't like it. They just really, really missed the being able to go to school and interact, you know, with the other kids, and they didn't like it. And looking forward, they're going to be in Washington. They're army brats, you know. They move around a lot. The family moves around a lot, and they're going to be in Washington for the next school year, and, you know, and we talked about it, and they just hope that they'll have some time with the other kids in school, and they don't like it. You know, they don't like the online learning. They do it, but, you know, they just kind of put up with it, and if any of you haven't had a chance to talk to the kids that are actually doing this online learning, and I think it's pretty similar throughout the whole country, you know, that they're doing this, you might do that. And I haven't talked personally with high school students to see, you know, what their take is on it. I do know that high school kids just really felt, just from secondhand conversations, that they really felt awful about not being able to go through the graduation ceremony. And so anyway, that's just a little, just wanted to share, you know, how the kids actually felt about it.
Yeah, thanks for that perspective.
And I wish some parents would call up, you know, to talk about what, you know, how their kids felt about it and how difficult it is for the parents to make this online learning work. Okay, thanks a lot, Greg.
Thank you. All the parents are probably not calling because they're busy running around after their kids trying to get them to pay attention to their summer school lesson. Wanted to chime in that the Facebook group that I mentioned is called Clatsop County Education Options, and it describes itself as being a resource group for parents and caregivers, tutoring, homeschooling, etc., and special education resources. So if you're on Facebook, check out Clatsop County Education Options. We've got another caller. You are on the air. Go ahead.
Is that me?
That is you.
Okay. Hi, Graham. This is Lexi.
Good morning.
I'm calling down from Seaside. Good morning. Hey, so I just had a couple ideas. I've been really trying to think out of the box. I did a surf camp program and surf lessons, and I had to meet really high standards for this phase two guidelines. And one of the things that I'm feeling in the groups is something that Neil Main, if he's listening, I would love to have him chime into the conversation. He's a retired Seaside High School biologist, and for many years would teach children at Seaside High School over there at the estuary, which was just across the street, science. And it was that hands-on experience in nature that was so amazing. So I had reflections of this since I've restarted my program. On July 1st, I started it back up, and I have young children coming out, and we're doing all of the protocol that you need to do with masks and social distancing. But they are so delighted to be able to be around other children in the nature and the learning environment and discovering surf science and understanding waves. And it got me thinking that maybe another portion of this online learning and this idea of rotating children through smaller classes would be engaging them in outdoor learning and doing something similar to what Neil Main did with teaching biology actually in the place where biology is, which is in rivers or creeks, way, you know, tide pools or estuaries.
Imagine that.
And then thinking even more out maybe to next year or the year after that, because who knows how long it's going to be till we can really contain this COVID-19. We might even have to be looking at, if we started incorporating this outdoor learning in nature, then maybe having their time off being winter and changing it so that spring, summer, and fall would be the months of the year that children would be learning. Just thinking out of the box and just knowing how much Neil Main impacted kids with that experience. I've met adults over the years that were students of his, and it was so remarkable how learning biology in nature really changed their course and their lives. And I know that also as a surf coach, and when I'm teaching children in nature up on the cliffs and showing them surf science and getting them in the waves and stuff, there's something really amazing that happens with that. So that was just something I wanted to add.
That's a great addition, Lexi, and you're the second person now to encourage more outdoor learning. So I see a pattern developing.
Okay, have a great show. Thanks
for the call. Let's see. I wanted to mention that Seaside and Napa have put out their tentative plans for reopening. Astoria has put out a survey and will formulate their plan next week. And Warrenton is having a town hall soon. I don't know exactly when, but to discuss their options and to gauge the temperature of how their city and community feels about this. With regards to thinking outside the box, I said I wasn't going to carry this conversation, but I do have one thought, and that is, I feel like it's too much of a burden for the individual teachers to be providing the distance learning for their normal class sizes. And I wonder if with this idea of more homeschools or more small, you know, pockets of schools where there's less exposure, if a teacher could then be transitioned to being responsible for 3 or 4 or 5 homeschool teachers. And they can direct their lesson plans and give them oversight and instruction, but they're not responsible for each and every student. You know, I wonder if sort of distributing the workload from a teacher to a smaller cohort of homeschool teachers could be a good idea. Let's see, line two, we've got another caller. You are on the air. Go ahead. What's your comment or question?
Is it me?
It is you.
Oh, this is Eileen.
Hi, Eileen.
Hi. I just wanted to say that from a teacher's perspective, going online with all of your curriculum is very, very challenging. And actually, teaching in a classroom is very, very challenging. And for parents, having the students not be in school is very, very challenging. And the one comment that I have is I applaud LA and San Diego for making their decisions so soon, because it gives people a chance to plan and make it work. And all of our town halls and meetings and surveys are great, but the clock is running out on giving teachers and parents what they need to be ready. So I think they should be making their decision now. I think it should be online, because the cases are just growing. They're not, you know, in 2 weeks, if people that say we're going to wait and see what happens in 2 weeks, how is 2 weeks going to be better, you know?
Absolutely.
So those are my comments.
Well, I think you make a really good point about giving people, you know, making a decision early, sticking with it. The radio station made a pretty strong decision to close down to volunteers to maintain maximum safety, you know, for our community.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into a wait and see mode, and better safe than sorry, and let's be cautious. And I think that approach has paid off. And so I think that anyone who's proposing the riskiest of options, you know, is out of their mind. I think caution is the way to go.
Yeah, I think we have to at this point. And I really, really feel for the parents and how they're going to organize their schedules with the kids home. But I don't see any other way.
Well, thank you for your call this morning, Eileen.
Okay, you're welcome.
You're listening to The Conversation. We're getting to the top of the hour. I want to promote tomorrow morning's Saturday Morning Classics. We have a new homegrown programmer joining the ranks, Mr. Jay Obenauer. One of our usual Saturday Morning Classics programmers has started recording shows from home, and so tomorrow's Morning Classics will feature local voices making local choices just for you. So tune in from 6 to 9 a.m. for Saturday Morning Classics with Jay Obenauer. Janine joined the ranks with Evening Jazz this past Wednesday. Happy to have Janine joining the crew. And I just want to say a special thanks to everybody who has stepped up as a homegrown programmer, and I hope that more of you will as well. Okay, this may be the last caller of the morning. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I am concerned because I wanted to see about getting a test, and there are not enough tests, the COVID tests in Clatsop County, for anybody who is not symptomatic. And I think that to go back to school, everybody has to be tested who wants to go to school, including the kids, their family members, everybody around them, so to make sure that everybody's protected and they're not the tests.
That's a good point. I've also heard that the turnaround time is pretty slow for getting the test results, which is complicating the issue.
Yes, yes. And I would like to have a nicely worded about cooperation en masse, that every parent who sends their kids to school has a commitment to wearing masks and doing everything possible. I just wish that somehow people would have a sense of community instead of a sense of their own personal rights and not to wear a mask. It's been such an issue.
Agreed. Well, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks to everyone who tuned in and called into the conversation this morning. Oh, one more call. Let's do it. You're on the air. You've got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Good morning, Graham. I'm concerned that this whole thing is going to disproportionately affect poor children, that middle-wage earners will be able to keep their kids home and help them get through the distance learning. And I do believe that kids can step away for a year or two and not be damaged. But it's the poor kids that I'm concerned about most. And by pushing this agenda of everybody's got to get back to school, it's another way of saying these kids are disposable. So let's look for ways that this administration is trying to, I don't know, dispose of people. It just seems that way to me.
All right, so, we got to wrap it up. Thanks for the call. But I encourage everyone to be an activist right now. Attend your town halls with your state senators, your United States senators. I know Merkley knows that the broadband in rural areas is an issue, but the more that we speak up about it, the better. Let's be advocates. It doesn't matter if you have kids or not. It doesn't matter if you're a teacher or not. Maybe your kids are grown and done with education, but there's people that need your advocacy. And so I encourage you to be an advocate and to fight for good broadband coverage in rural areas, fight for the poor. And stay tuned to KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, coastradio.org.